This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Approximately 3,200 unionized Boeing machinists in the St. Louis area have been on strike since August 4th. They have rejected three contract offers from the company. In mid-September, 90% of workers voted to approve a contract proposed by union leadership. Boeing rejected it, dismissing the vote as a, quote, publicity stunt. There's been little movement on further contract negotiations since then. Jake Rosenfeld is a labor expert and the department chair of sociology at Washington University, and he joins us now to discuss this. Jake, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So, Jake, holding a vote on a contract that is proposed by union leadership rather than the company is a pretty rare move. Why is that the case?
Well, the company wants its time to negotiate as well. I think you can read this particular move as a way for the union to get a temperature of their rank and file and to see where the kind of sticking points were in negotiations thus far.
And what was that temperature from your perspective?
We saw this in past periods of contract negotiations. A lot of it has to do with changes to the retirement plans at Boeing. This has been a sticking point both with our local machinists, and it's been a sticking point with other Boeing workers elsewhere. We saw this on full display last fall in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Can you recall any other strikes across the country where a union has employed this strategy that we've just talked about?
That's a great question. And I've looked at plenty of kind of work stoppages over the years now. This is extraordinarily rare. I won't say it's unprecedented, but to kind of publicly float a contract proposal that you've simply kind of come up with on your own without company input, that's pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. There is what I understand is, you know, the concession bargaining versus offensive bargaining. What is important to note about the differences between those and what we're seeing right now?
That's a fantastic question. So for decades, most of these types of work stoppages, these major strikes involving thousands of workers, were concessionary. These were companies going on the offense to extract concessions from their workforce. Starting about 5-6 years ago, we saw a reversal of that dominant pattern. Workers had gained some leverage and were looking to go on the offensive against their firms and to really push for more generous contracts.
So you mentioned retirement as something that they're really pushing for here. Is that because of what the workforce looks like right now?
It's a good question. I think it has a lot to do with long-standing changes in how employers are handling workers' retirement plans. So there was an era in the U.S., especially in large unionized companies, where workers expected defined benefit retirement plans. They could count on a certain amount each year, usually a percentage of their salary upon retirement. The shift in corporation after corporation over the years has been towards 401k plans. So these are defined contribution plans where much of the risk involved in planning for retirement falls on the workers and is shifted away from the company. And this has been a longstanding sticking point between Boeing and its workforce.
Mm-hmm. Jake, can you walk us through what made this offer in mid-September so much more appealing to the members than the prior three that were presented that came from the company?
Sure. I think there are two fundamental differences from where the company seems to be right now and where the workforce seems to be. One is signing bonus. Right now, the signing bonus on offer from the company is dramatically lower than what the workers are demanding. And here it raises questions from the workforce about why is our signing bonus that you're offering us so much lower than what you granted to workers out in the Seattle region just last year?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second issue has to do with retirement. again, the workers here are asking, why is your contributions to our 401k plan not matching what was negotiated out west with our fellow machinists there?
Mm-hmm. And as far as the signing bonus goes, I mean, what is the difference?
What we've seen so far is we're talking about workers asking for on the order of $10,000 in signing bonus to kind of solve this impasse. And what the company has been offering is more like half of that or even a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, sure. Go ahead.
To the, you know, the company will counter and say that St. Louis region's cost of living is much lower than what workers in the Pacific Northwest experience. Having lived in the Pacific Northwest, the company is not lying here. But it raises interesting questions about how workers interpret this, because most workers think this is equal pay and should deserve equal work and should deserve equal pay for it.
Are there any other differences or similarities between what happened in the Pacific Northwest last year and what is going on now insofar as these contracts go?
Yeah, so there's some really important similarities. First and foremost, the workers, just to show again how they're on the offense in recent years, rejected various company offers that their own union had urged them to accept. So we saw that out west. We saw that in our own region, where the workers seem to be one step ahead of their own representatives in terms of their demands. So that has been similar. The difference, I would say, at least at this point, is how hard company is bargaining. In the Pacific Northwest, you know, the contract dispute went on for some time, didn't quite last 2 months, but there weren't the kind of threats of hiring replacement workers. There wasn't the kind of digging in of the heels that we see here in the St. Louis region.
Mm-hmm. There are also many more, there were, that is, many more union members who are part of what was happening in the Pacific Northwest than there are here. How does that account for what is happening now?
Yeah, that's an important point. So the strike out west involved about 10 times the number of workers involved in the dispute here. And that, I think, has resulted, along with some other important dynamics, in a kind of less coverage, especially at the national level, from the press and from politicians to the dispute. And I think that has actually worked to the company's advantage thus far.
So coverage, what kind of coverage are you talking about? Is there anything that stands out to you?
It was front page news across national newspapers and, other news sources for days last fall. And it followed on the heels of a kind of wave of successful strikes or near strikes from organized companies that had really grabbed the nation's media and policymakers' attention. Combined with the fact that we know from recent polling that unions remain exceptionally popular, I think that puts some leverage on companies to settle in ways that dynamic seems to have shifted now.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of Boeing's biggest arguments has been that the union should stop trying to get the same deal Seattle did, because this is the Midwest, not the Pacific Northwest, and this is something that you've just mentioned, Jake. But here's what union member Joshua Arnold, who says the members don't want the exact same deal as Seattle.
We're not asking for anything more than what other machinists in other places that work for them are getting. We're not asking for more than Seattle. We're not even asking for everything that Seattle got. We want something comparable.
Jake, what do you make of Boeing's take on what is happening here in the St. Louis area?
On the one hand, the cost of living differences are real. On the other hand, what they're offering, I can understand the workers' perspective. It is true that they are not asking for quite the size of the signing bonus that the Seattle area workers asked for. They're asking for slightly lower, the workers are, and what the company's offered has, not come close to that. So these are, real issues. And it, speaks to workers' understanding of what determines their pay.
Mm-hmm.
We know kind of theoretically that cost of living differences are in fact real, but we also hold deeply to the idea that our work should, our work should be compensated similarly if the work itself is the same.
Mm-hmm. What are we talking about as far as cost of living differences, you know, for those who are not familiar with what it is like to live in the Pacific Northwest and particularly in Washington State?
The number one issue here will be housing cost differences. And so the Seattle region has seen an incredible run up in housing costs over the last probably going on almost two decades now. Mm-hmm. And as a former resident of Seattle, I can attest that the differences are real, but they're not, you know, they're not totally dramatic. And, everything depends on your personal circumstances as well.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Jake Rosenfeld, who is a labor expert and with Washington University as a professor of sociology. And we're discussing the ongoing Boeing strike. It is now entering into its 10th week. It got started on August 4th. Jake, last week, Boeing's president and CEO of Defense, Space, and Security, Steve Parker, joined the conversation. He sent a letter to union members doubling down that the company will not be making a better offer. Do you think that this is true, Jake, or do you think the company might make some changes if this strike continues the way that it has?
That's a huge question right now. You know, we got some word last week from Washington, D.C. that Air Force deliveries from Boeing are behind, and that was attributed to the impasse in our region. That's going to pressure the company to end this. We also had hearings last week on Capitol Hill where Josh Hawley teamed up with Senator Bernie Sanders to really grill a Boeing representative. And that, too, will increase pressure on the company to settle. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, those have been relatively isolated incidents over the past couple of months. And again, I think the company has benefited from a lack of broader attention to this particular strike. And that has helped them kind of really dig in and really hold the line against workers' requests.
Mm-hmm. What are the long-term impacts that this delay could have?
Well, cost to the company, and this is a company it's important to remember that is, you know, trying to dig out of recent scandals and real cost pressures partly resulting from those scandals. And so, you know, recently Boeing posted its most profitable quarter in a long time. The CEO has declared 2025 the kind of year of rebuilding. And this is another setback that, as it drags on, could continue the narrative that this is a company that cannot get out of its own way.
Mm-hmm. In terms of union strikes and negotiations that you've studied and seen, Jake, over the years, is this one playing out, you know, as they typically do? I mean, is there anything that is notable beyond what you said about the offensive that the union side is taking? Is there anything else that stands out to you as worthy of taking note of and watching?
I think certainly as, you know, we entered the fourth, fifth week, this was a strike that was following similar dynamics that we saw in recent years, where workers were really making some what would be seen in past decades as really aggressive demands, and they were winning them. And now we are in a slightly different framework, right? There are signs that the economy is shifting, the labor market is loosening. And so the question here is whether employers are able to hold the line and whether they are going to aggressively try to hold the line, or whether this will be another example of workers winning significant gains. Gains that from the workers' perspective, they are just kind of making up for given past rounds of concessionary bargaining.
Mm-hmm. Many of the union members are committed to holding the line until they get a fair contract. But after the third contract was rejected in September, union member Ken Kellogg was worried about his financial future.
I've been without a paycheck for 2 months, and it's really starting to weigh on me. I just bought a house. I'm already 2 weeks late on my first house payment.
What kinds of resources, Jake, do unions have to make sure that their members during a strike have something that's coming in?
Yeah, they tap what are called strike funds. And right now, we just got reports that they are also able to, they're receiving some contributions from their machinists, Boeing machinists from the West Coast. So the Boeing machinists from the West Coast have been raising funds and sending them to striking workers in our region. That said, you know, it's just really important to keep in mind that strikes are really, really tough affairs. They're tough for everyone involved. You know, it's part of the reason why they are exceptionally rare. They are kind of last-ditch efforts to resolve contract disputes, and that the workers who are out there every day are really sacrificing because, you know, no strike fund is ample enough to make up for the lost salary that they were receiving.
Mm-hmm. Does that kind of cross-union support happen often?
It sure does. And, you know, one of the kind of issues to watch, and I'm sure the company is well aware, is that in one of the recent votes, a rejection of a company offer, it wasn't overwhelming. This wasn't a 90-10 vote. This was, you know, something like high 50s, low 40s. And I think the company saw that as a sign that there was some fractures within worker morale and support for keeping the strike going indefinitely.
Mm-hmm. Might there be any message about Boeing machinist solidarity in this particular instance of support?
I mean, I think that those kind of vote numbers point to, you know, some strong disagreement internally about whether they want to keep this fight going much longer.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you also saw that kind of vote taken by the union contract offer without negotiations with Boeing, and that was overwhelming. So there's a clear sign of what the workers want. It's a question of whether they can hold the line and hold a majority out to support pressing the case even further.
Mm-hmm. How is it that strike funds are typically distributed, Jake?
That's a great question. So, you know, unions raise revenue through taking a small portion of their members' paychecks. Some of that money will go into a strike fund reserve. And then that it's distributed, you know, that you try to the extent you can anticipate these things, you know, when a contract is up, you can start to really kind of redirect more resources into the funds themselves. And then for workers directly affected by the strike, they will receive those, you know, they will receive portions of those funds as the strike goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the funds are not everlasting. And it, needless to say, in all of these disputes, the companies have much more resources at their disposal than
mm-hmm.
the union does. And that's another reason why companies oftentimes are okay seeing these disputes go on for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Something I did want to ask you about, too, is that IAM 837, which is the machinist here in the St. Louis area, they're also taking donations to their strike fund online.
Hmm.
Is that a common practice? You know, has that come into more use in recent years?
That's a good question. I haven't seen that all too often. It's not particularly surprising in this case, given how long the dispute has lasted. And so if from the union's perspective, they are going to try to raise funds any way they can. You know, they're going to get funds from the national union, the national IAM, and then they're going to use what their local has raised as well. But I'm not surprised that they're reaching out for broader community support right now because, again, this is, you know, entering, you know, month three now of the impasse.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a heavy toll on these workers
mm-hmm.
and their families.
Dan Gillian, who's the Boeing St. Louis vice president of Air Dominance, said in a message that Boeing St. Louis would start training permanent replacement workers to replace union members in manufacturing jobs. The union members, however, are not concerned about this because of the intense training that is required to do what they've been doing. Do you think the company will have much success in replacing union workers?
Well, it's important to say that this is, you know, a threat that workers shouldn't dismiss completely out of hand. This was a common tactic throughout concessionary bargaining in the 1980s, 1990s, early 2000s. That said, the workers who have come out and said this is more of an idle threat given the long training involved in getting a worker up to speed to work one of these jobs is true as well. And also, you know, the broader context of Boeing here is important. Issues in recent years and the scandals in recent years have exposed real quality control issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, threatening to, or let alone carrying out, in the threat of hiring permanent replacement workers certainly lends itself to charges that the firm is skimping on safety and quality once again.
Mm-hmm. Jake, when a strike lasts as long as this one has, and it is not over yet, I mean, are there risks that union members face that the general public typically doesn't understand well, especially if people don't have family or close friends who are part of a union?
Yes. And what we know from the kind of research and literature on union popularity of that is that especially as the economy sours, your typical non-union worker, non-union workers' families are less likely to sympathize with what's happening among the organized portion of the workforce. And so in recent years, I think union workers have really benefited from tight labor markets, you know, sub 4% unemployment, generally rising wages, especially at the bottom of the income ladder. And right now, as that ground is shifting a bit, that dynamic, the kind of positive feelings towards organized labor, the support and sympathy for workers out on strike, may be shifting a little. But I would say that this is all happening in real time, and we haven't seen that borne out by the data yet. Union popularity remains historically high.
Mm-hmm. What's next for Boeing, Jake, if you look into your crystal ball?
Right.
Do you see a path to this strike's ending anytime soon?
Yeah, it's easy for an outsider like me to describe a likely path and a path that certainly makes sense to me. But I think what we're likely to see, or what, you know, a company that's trying to kind of move away from the narrative that they are beset by problems, whether with their workforce or with their products, is to kind of meet the workers close to where they are, except that they're going to have to get a little bit more in terms of 401k contributions and signing bonuses, but also accept that they don't need to go all the way towards the contracts that they negotiated out west, but that it's going to be very hard to explain to these workers, thousands of them, that they have to settle for dramatically less than what their West Coast machinist did just a year ago. You know, that is front of mind to striking workers here, along with the fact that the company is both raking in revenue again,
mm-hmm.
And has just signed a new contract with the Air Force that, you know, is going to need a lot of production here in our region as well.
Mm-hmm.
The workers know this, and so they can accept that the company can afford to pay a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense of whether the union or the company will, you know, quote unquote, cave first, or is cave even the right term to be using here?
I think it's totally fine. You have word term and used all the time in union negotiations. And right now we don't see it. Right now it is, you know, we seem stuck. I would maintain that more attention from state, local policymakers, more attention from the press, puts pressure on the company to make this thing go away. You know, it's remarkable to have a Republican senator from our state really leaning on the company to get this over with and to do right for workers. And to the extent Hawley can, you know, unite with other lawmakers to pressure the company, I think that that works to the workers' benefit as well.
Mm-hmm. And in our last minute, do you think that this strike will influence future labor strikes, particularly at the regional level?
Yes. And so looking over the data last night, if this current strike is not the largest ongoing work stoppage in the U.S., it's certainly up there right now. And so, you know, what we know is that strikes, you know, are contagious and the lack of strikes are contagious. And so a successful strike here could embolden other workers whose contracts are coming up and one in which the company is able to hold the line and really, you know, and really settle for less than what they settled for out west also would have reverberations across our region and the nation, because, you know, this is a large dispute involving, you know, a central, strategically vital corporation.
Jake Rosenfeld is a labor scholar and the department chair of sociology at Washington University. Jake, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
This episode was produced by Olivia Mizell.
Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio.
Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.